Campus FM presents My Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s. Produced and presented by Patricia Salomone.
In the long, quiet evenings before the advent of television, my father listened to the BBC News and my mother played Chopin on our piano. Her music drifted out through the open windows into the dark summer nights, lit up only here and there by the dim lights in the British military barracks opposite our home.
Watch out for the barbed wire! No worry, Nanny Jean. We were only burning my dead canary.
Meine Kaserne vor dem großen Tor steht ne Laterne und steht sie noch davor. Da wollen wir uns wiedersehen. Bei der Laterne wollen wir stehen. Wie einst Lili Marlene. Wie einst Lili Marlin. Unsere beiden Schatten sahen wie einer aus. Dass wir lieb uns hatten, das sah man gleich daraus. Und alle Leute sollen es sehen, wenn wir bei der Laterne stehen. Wie einst Lili Marlin.
In a straight line, forming a procession, plump me at the head, we carried the dead bird, its yellow feathers dull and lifeless. We had laid it in my old wooden pencil box, so like a little coffin. We're going to bury it under the gunpost where there's a gap in the barbed wire. Under the gunpost where the enemy gang will not find it. If they do, and if they dare touch our treasure, we shall fight them. Oh, yeah, gosh, if we shall fight them. We walked in line, you and I, Roy, at the head, followed by green-eyed Elizabeth, tall and skinny, by her sister, another Pat, and then came Daniela, Isabella, Christina, Brian, burnt as a burnt peanut, his little sister Nadine, and the twins, Sandra and Claudia, a mirror image of each other. And, of course, there was Mark, in his little homemade linen shorts.
Wenn sich die späten Nebel drehen, wer wird bei der Laterne stehen? Mit dir, Lili Marlin.
Get out, you're not allowed here, you Maltesers. Get out yourselves, you egg and bacon English. We would roar back. So we fought, and we battled, and yet we played. And all we knew was British, our games, our lullabies, our nursery rhymes, and our schooling.
Sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye, 24 blackbirds baked in a pie. When the pie was opened, the birds began to sing. Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before the king?
School at 8:30, and prayer, in English, of course. Stand in line, two by two, and silence, no talking. 17th March, St. Patrick's Day. Remember, girls, wear a green ribbon, and we shall all paint shamrock leaves tomorrow and sing hymns in the praise of St. Patrick. It was my feast day, too. and so close to my birthday, the Ides of March, born in the baby boom year, a war child, offspring of the most incongruent of young couples. Often she recalled, "Your father took me to watch a film at the Orpheum in Gzira the night you were born. We walked all the way, and the contractions came. He did not understand, so we kept walking on." She never told me the title of the film, but said that she had been charmed by the actress, Patricia O'Neill. So my name was to be Patricia. Throughout my life, only she always called me by my full name, always Patricia, never Pat or Patty or Tricia or Patrizia.
Blackbirds baked in a pie. When the pie was opened, the birds began to sing. Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before the king?
As for my father, how was he expected to understand and be prepared to face women's matters? He was only 24 years old. 6 years before, just out of college, he had been thrown into the war. A college boy since four, no intimacy with his mother, no knowledge of women's things. He had seen service in India, where he had been sent from Alexandria in Egypt. The convoy he travelled in from Malta had been bombed, but he reached Egypt safely and cabled his family, although the exact provenance of the cable was obliterated by the military authorities. Once in Egypt, he was commissioned into the British Intelligence Service, together with other fellow Maltese officers. He used to mention Dublé and Sullivan, amongst others. His perfect knowledge of Dante's language, which had been imbued him by Umberto Calosso at St. Edward's College, earned him the position of interpreter and liaison officer with the Italian prisoners of war in India. His had not been a cruel war. His position gave him the opportunity of exercising his kindly disposition. To be, yes, of service to the British Empire, but to be of help to the men, many of them younger than he, prisoners of war, far from there and his Mediterranean. He was fascinated by the charms of India, its spices and colours, the beauty and the courtesy of its people. He loved Indian food. Its taste and aroma brought back memories of that great nation for which he longed throughout his life. He had known Bombay and Calcutta and Bangalore, of which he recalled the main avenue lined by rows of glorious jacarandas. Once the Allies occupied southern Italy, he was posted in Taranto. And it was there that the pretty blue-eyed blonde Italian signorina was introduced to him by her uncle, liaison officer in the Regio Esercito, on Christmas Day of 1944. Her family became his family when they married on the 12th of June, 1946, the day Italy was declared a republic.
D'amore tulli 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 pam, delizioso cuore tutti i sogni miei ti giungerà e di me ti caleranno. I meravigliosi tulli 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 pam, la 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 la. Parlano tra loro tulli 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 pam. Tu, vas-y, gosse, l'on te vient.
9 months later, as they walked back from the Orpheum along the Xira seafront, the fruit of their love decided to come into the world. And you were born, and I called you Patricia, like the actress in the film. And from your blue eyes I took my light, and I determined to stick it out and not to die of nostalgia for your sake. Every year, at every birthday, on the 15th of March, she repeated the same words. Figlia, presi la mia luce dai tuoi occhi blu. From your blue eyes I took my light. You were born with a tooth, and I could not understand why it hurt so much when they put you to my breast. But I was determined to stick it. I took my life from you blue eyes, and you had to take yours from my breast. But on the morrow of your birth, the nurse picked you up out of the cradle, and she ran off shouting, Andasinna, Andasinna! Dio mio, la mia bambina è morta, she cried silently to herself. She did not understand the strange language. Young and unaided, she had delivered me, her first child, far from the shelter of her own people. Thus here I was, born to an Italian mother in an English nursing home run by Maltese nurses. But I was born. I had blue eyes, and yes, I had a tooth. Every birthday was a feast with little girls wearing big white ribbons, party frocks and garlands in their hair. Little boys wore bow ties and shiny shoes, and the feast was really joyful. Those, finally, were the penicillin years, and little boys and girls no longer died of bronchopneumonia. Thank Jesus, Mary and Joseph. So each birthday called for a big celebration. The preparation was as much fun as the feast itself. She would prepare and decorate a birthday cake, rather clumsy and not quite exceptional. Each year, one candle more. Cheesecakes were bought from Sapienza's round the corner of the school, and sweets were ordered at Blackley's confectionery, down the road in Tignier. Not too many ever. 12 chocolate squares. We shall cut them in half so they will make 24. A sponge roly-poly to be sliced thinly. It will look nice with its rings of juicy strawberry jam oozing out. There will also be bowls of jelly and whipped cream made out of tinned milk, sugar and lemon juice. Your birthday always recurs during Lent, and your cousins will not be allowed to touch the sweets. So I'll prepare their favourite sandwiches, tomatoes and hard-boiled eggs. She had prepared crinkled paper skirts, which we would wear, and the show was on with much music and dancing.
All'alba quando spunta il sole, là nell'Abruzzo tutto d'oro, le prosperose campagnole discendono le valli in fior.
We danced and sang. Some bolder guests even recited poetry. In her funny nasal voice, Cecilia, my school friend, quite oblivious of the fact that we were nearly in spring, would intone, Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose. We laughed and clapped, and I can still hear the echoes of those childish voices.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of
of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph play in any reindeer games.
Little Mark would come along, as usual wearing one of the homemade linen shorts made out of the cloth his mother had taken from her father's drapery. He wore his whitest shirt and a bow tie, just as Roy would. His mother Emma and mine Anna would dance and clown around. Who needed a pair of entertainers? Our blonde mothers acted, sang and danced. We followed, clapping, tapping, stomping, enjoying every minute of it and simply loving it. It was your birthday too, Roy. But in those little square black and white photos taken by my dad under our windows in Dragut Street, there is no sign of you. You were locked up in college. I can see rows of skinny girls wearing white ankle socks and ribbons in their hair, smiling to the camera. A few boys, yes, but not you.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
You were locked up in boarding school, and I had to wait till the Easter holidays to see you again. To stand on the toilet seat and stretch myself through the small bathroom window to knock on your window panes, calling you out. Roy! Roy! Do let him know I am ill in bed again. Before long, you would round downstairs B and knock on 3C. 12 weeks had passed, and you looked taller and a little more handsome. I felt a little shy for being ill again. Blast those nasty tonsils. You did not really mind, so long as we could play. Do you remember the compendium of games box? The Ludo and the snakes and leathers were our favourite games. Sometimes it would be a card game, Happy Families. If I was strong enough and allowed out of bed, we would sit at the window for your favourite game. Let's write down car numbers. To be honest, I could not quite understand what was so great about writing car numbers, but it was your choice, so I went along. 2 hours at the windowsill, and 20 cars had driven along Dragut Street. Those were the days of little traffic, little pollution, and little noise. The background music came from beyond the ditch, far beyond the barracks, a military march, soldiers on parade. Far beyond the barracks, before the Grand Harbour breakwater and the lighthouse, lay the black rocks where the mighty corsair had met his death 400 years before. How much history! The fate of Europe decided upon those rocks. Regardless, you a little Jewish boy, Maltese by birth, half Austrian, half English, and I a little Catholic girl, who felt Italian, was Maltese and spoke English, sat at a window sill in Dragut Street, opposite the blue Mediterranean, in Quisisana, writing down car numbers, muttering, giggling, oblivious of the world out there. Every morning in the distance, beyond the barbed wire fence, beyond the ditch and behind the great rusty cannon, Virginia Garrison went on parade. Through the haze of a sore throat and temperature, I'd hear the loud roar of the sergeant major, "Quick march, left, right, left, right," and the drums and the pipes would sound their rhythmic tune. Days in bed, Daddy boiling the syringe when he came home from work in the evening. He sprayed water showers on the wall, making out fancy designs to make me laugh. And she, so worried, calling the patient family doctor, 1191. Then, once more, it would be over, and she would open the window to let in the fresh air. She would gently help me out of bed. "Guarda come sei cresciuta," she would say, standing me behind the door to scratch a new mark on the wall. It was my consolation for the frequent bouts of illness, each time a little taller. "Vedrai, sarai una bellissima ragazza." Summer evenings after sundown, my dad would listen to the radio, the BBC News, or Chopin, a nocturne, or Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, his favorite piece, and the first I would learn to play on the piano. That he is no more. I have learnt that it was the piano piece BBC had transmitted on his family's request to him on his 20th birthday, when, as a young officer, he served in India. She would be in the kitchen preparing the dinner. The spaghetti are boiling and the fresh tomato sauce is ready. The pepperoni are frying, such a tantalizing smell. Dinner time. The four of us seated around the green table,
Again I hear the voices, and through the open windows you would hear a piano languidly playing in the distance.
Night and day, you are the one. Only you beneath the moon and under the sun. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter, darling, where you are, I think of you. Day and night, night and day, why is it so? That this longing for you follows wherever I go. In the roaring traffic's boom, or in the silence of my lonely room, I think.
The music comes from the officers' mess, but I shall tell you more about this next week. More about the officers' mess across the moat. Till then, goodbye.
Under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me, and its torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day. Night and day, under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning way down inside of me, and its torment won't ever be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day.